All right, I'm here with Les McEwen, and I'm really looking forward to this because Les has an extensive level of experience in business, not just the 25 years, but Les has started 42 companies. He's the founding partner of a consulting company that has launched literally hundreds of businesses. And so as I always do to try and bring to all of you real-world experience, I mean, Les has worked with Harvard University, the U.S. Army, Microsoft, and the companies go on and on. He's also the author of an upcoming book, Predictable Success, Getting Your Organization Back on the Growth Track. And I've recently purchased a copy of the book. I cut it short. Getting Back on the Growth Track and Keeping It There. How can I leave off that part of the title? But I just have to tell you, I recently had a chance to purchase the book. I haven't finished it yet, but the ideas are insightful and enlightening for anybody who leads a team, an organization, a business, large or small. I would definitely encourage you to check it out. So, Les, do I have you with me here?
Delighted to be here, John. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, Les, I'm glad to have you here. And the question that I want to focus in on today, Les, has to do with one-on-one coaching conversations. And here's what I'd love to know. In your experience, what have you found to be maybe the most important insight to helping a manager to get real, dramatic, immediate, and also lasting results with their one-on-one coaching conversations?
Well, the key to me, John, is pretty straightforward, and it comes down to what the essence is of coaching. What makes coaching different from any other interaction with your team members? What is it that makes coaching different from performance assessment? What makes coaching different from on-the-job training? What makes coaching different from a casual conversation? And the key is one thing. It's providing a risk-free environment. That's really what it boils down to. You know, if you wanted me to coach you on how to make scrambled eggs, what's the difference between me coaching you and doing that and me giving you some on-the-job training in our busy restaurant at night? Well, the difference is when I'm coaching you, you can screw it up. You can mess around. You can try stuff. You can experiment. You can break the eggs. You can overcook them. You can do whatever you want because I'm coaching you, and that's what we're here to do, is to allow you to make mistakes. So I find, for me, and anyway, I'm not saying that this is a universal and applies to everyone, but for me, when I provide the folks that I'm working with a risk-free environment, then we start to get really accelerated results.
I like that. I like the term risk-free environment. And so, Les, a couple questions come up for me here. And the first question is, first of all, what does that mean to create a risk-free environment to you? And then secondly, how do you do that? What are some of the ways that you set a context so that people feel comfortable taking risks?
Well, in terms of what it means, for me, it means something pretty simple. It is simply that the person that I'm working with, my team member, the person I'm coaching, can screw something up and not feel bad about it. In fact, what I like to encourage is the fact that if we're going to make some progress here, you're going to screw up at some point anyway, so why don't we get there, get that done, get on with it, and get past it. So the removal of fear really is usually the key issue here, that people who are being coached lose any sense of fear. And that doesn't mean to say that they're necessarily sitting down sweating buckets and looking terrified, but they may just have some sense of apprehension about the interaction that they're having with you, and that constrains their ability to feel free to try stuff out and to experiment. Now, in practical terms, what does that mean? Well, this is where the art of coaching comes in alongside the science of coaching, because that's different for everybody. And part of what you've got to be looking for as a coach is what might be making this interaction not be risk-free. What might be introducing some sort of a fear factor for this person, not in general, but for this person. So let me give you some of the specifics that I've encountered. Location, where is this being held? If you're endeavoring to give a coaching interaction in front of 25 other people, well, good luck to you. You know, you might think that's clever, but it isn't. because particularly if you've sprung it on somebody. You know, the idea of jumping on somebody, correcting what they just did in front of a whole bunch of other people and telling them that's a coaching moment, nonsense. No, it's not. All you're doing is throwing your ego around and making yourself feel good. So location is really important. Coach as much as possible in an environment where somebody's not going to be terrified, and that means usually coaching them offline, coaching them not in front of a whole group of people. It might mean not doing it in your office. It might mean doing it out on the road when you're doing a ride-along or when you're in neutral territory. It might even mean going and sitting where they are. Maybe you can do it better in Starbucks. It means not hooking it into the start or end of a more formal interaction. Trying to coach somebody at the start of their quarterly review, in the middle of their quarterly review, at the end of their quarterly review, it doesn't work because they're tense, they're nervous. They associate the quarterly review or the monthly review, the daily review, the annual review, whatever it is, whatever that formal interaction, they associate that correctly with risk and consequence. There's a reason for having those reviews. They're good things to have. They're important things to have. But there's risk involved and there's consequence involved. There's a reward involved. There's consequence involved. With coaching, it's not going to work if you're holding some sort of reward and consequence over people's head. You want to get them offline, as I've been saying, where they're relaxed. So decouple the coaching process from other formal interactions. Thirdly, make it regular. It doesn't have to be frequent. But those leaders and managers that I see who are very hard to read as to when they might be coaching you, whether they might be coaching you or not. You know, was that an instruction you just gave me? Did you just tell me to do this, or are you coaching or helping me to do this? If you're coaching someone regularly, for example, one of the things that I suggest people do is, why don't you set, I'm just going to make this up, the third Thursday of every month aside as an open sort of like a gym for your team members and say, okay, every third Thursday morning I'm going to have my office door open. You want to talk about some stuff, just come on and sit down and I'll coach you. I'll help you with that. They know what that is. They know that that's a coaching interaction because you've told them it's a coaching interaction. And if you do it every third Thursday for 5, 6, 7 months, they might actually get to believe that you are approaching this as a coaching interaction and that you're not going to slap them upside the head when they get something wrong. So all of those things can help reduce that fear factor and can make coaching a safe environment. Now, I do want to make one thing clear here, John. I'm not talking about some pansy interaction where everybody sings kumbaya and everybody's happy and there's no problems, there's no difficulties. If somebody just resolutely refuses to get it, isn't responding to coaching, is clearly being antithetical to coaching in their own outlook, doesn't want to engage, isn't trying their best, then all of the risk and reward that comes with that comes into play. I'm talking about two adults getting together, one of whom wants to help the other one perform better, and the other one wanting to respond to that. I'm just assuming that that's there. If that's there, then you got to create a risk-free environment to get the best results.
I love that. You know, I'm of course just listening and taking notes, and you know what I'm hearing you share, Les, is that in a coaching relationship, creating that risk-free environment requires paying attention to the environment, to timing, and also the consistency or some type of consistency. And I think that makes so much sense. One question I have for you, because this is something I see that comes up regularly, Les, is when I'm working with a manager who has performed at a high level or they have very high standards, I've noticed that there can be a challenge for some managers or executives in balancing having high standards of performance between that and also being willing to actually embrace or accept mistakes. I tell my clients all the time, you got to create a culture where people can embrace making mistakes because that's how we learn. But do you have any insights of what you would share with a manager of how they can make it okay for someone to make mistakes and how do you coach them on understanding that that's what gets you to high performance and how to not beat people up when they make a mistake and turn around and use that as a learning opportunity? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I would have two thoughts about it, John. The first one is that there are a whole bunch of people who shouldn't be coaching. there are a bunch of people, and many of them are very high performers, who are just terrible coaches. They just shouldn't be doing it, and they're wasting their time, they're wasting the coachee's time, they're getting everybody irritated, including themselves. And often with the type of person that you're talking about, and you know, I meet them a lot myself, to be quite frank and blunt about it, it's tied up in their ego. You know, often these are people who were very high performers, and for one reason or another, want to consistently make it clear to everybody else, you know, I didn't have to go through all of this when I was learning the ropes. I, you know, did it all in a breeze, and I've got very high standards for myself, and I demand those of you. And, you know, it's the drop them in to the deep end and let them sink or swim approach. Well, you know what? You shouldn't be a swimming coach. Because you're gonna have a few people drown, and then you're gonna have a few a few lawsuits in your hands. So there's some people just shouldn't be coaching. From the other perspective, where it's perhaps more a question of mismatched expectations. One of the things that I find useful to do, and here we're talking about coaching the coaches, is to find an area of interest or expertise that they would like to improve on. Let me take a very common example. If you're interested in golf and you're just getting started and you want to get better at golf, if I said to you, well, I'll tell you what, I'm booked us into a tournament on Thursday, you're my partner, we're going up against scratch golfers, I'll tell you what you need to know on the way around, but if you screw up, let me make it really clear, I am going to be after your hide. There is no room for mistakes here. I have high expectations. I mean, what would you think? You think this guy's crazy. This guy's just crazy. I need to be taken off to the driving range. I need to be shown how to do this. I need to be handed the club, and I need to be allowed to whiff a few, slice a few, hook a few. If you don't let me do that and then show me how to correct it, then we ain't going anywhere. But that sort of sink or swim, let's just get on with it, a very low tolerance for error or for mistake, you know, first thing you got to think is, should you really be coaching? And you know, I've advised a lot of people over the years, this is not something you should be doing.
Gosh, what a great analogy, Les. I really appreciate that, especially because I am a golfer.
Well,
an example you gave would not work.
No, it would not work, and it wouldn't matter how good a golfer you were. You can't make somebody else learn that way. Now, maybe you learned really fast, and maybe you get frustrated, therefore, when other people don't learn at the speed you do. But if you can't be adult about it, I mean, this is a pretty simple mental calculation. Hey, I was better at their stage than they are now, so I'm going to have to slow up and take a little bit more time. If you get impatient, you say, well, you know what, I expect everybody to rocket through this the way I did, then you probably shouldn't be coaching. It's pretty simple. And it brings us to an undercurrent of the whole thing about providing a risk-free environment, John, that maybe I could just broaden the discussion out a little bit because it impacts both coaches and coachees. And it's this: the number one thing that gets out in the way of high-quality coaching interaction are the myths we tell each other, we tell ourselves about ourselves. And if a coach is walking around with some sort of a myth in their mindset about what they are, how they are, who they are, how they learned, it's going to get in the way, just as much as in the coachee's perception. If they've got myths in their head about what they're capable of, you know, how good they can be, either, you know, over-egging the pudding or underestimating their own skills, then that all gets in the way of high-quality coaching. And, you know, the best coaching becomes between folks that I've got a very technical term for. I call them adults. People who can look at a situation and say, hey, let's be adult about this. I was better than you at this stage in my development. That doesn't make me a better or worse person. It does mean I need to slow up a bit here and reach out and give you a helping hand, not try to beat you down because you're not learning as fast as I did. You know, being adult helps with an awful lot of stuff.
What a great example. I mean, what you're really saying is just being able to coach somebody in reality. And
absolutely.
I love that insight. That's great. Well, you know, Les, the time has flown by, and I've appreciated this opportunity. Real quick, can you share with our listeners where they can learn more about you? Where can we send them to pick up a copy of Predictable Success?
Sure. Just go to predictablesuccess.com, all one word, predictablesuccess.com, and there are links there to look at the book, to look at what I've done, to pick up some resources, see some other interviews with other people, and people can crawl around there and grab a lot of really useful stuff.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I hope everybody does that. And Les, thanks again for your time. It's been fantastic getting to know you, and looking forward to the next time we get to connect.
Thank you very much indeed, John. My pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.